the sheriff's won. You've sort of struggled with getting to the knockout stage of the Champions League, you know, the last, whatever, 3 years, whatever it is. It seems like you're on the verge of potentially doing that now. Still, you know, still not done yet. You have 7 points with 2 matches to go, and still have to play Real Madrid. But from the looks of it, as long as they take care of business, you're probably 3 points away from qualifying for the round of 16 after beating Sheriff this week. What were your thoughts on that, and do you feel like it's getting closer?
Well, first and foremost, I think the match was – the win was much deserved, especially since we are trying to make it out of the group stages for the first time in, like, a couple of years. So it is – that it is a huge win in that regard. Inter played very well. They were played aggressively on the attack. Defensive-wise, they made sure they thwarted any, like, goal opportunities from Sheriff. But overall, very good win, and it is definitely nice to see that Inter are kind of performing a little bit better in the Champions League group stages compared to seasons prior. And do I think it's getting closer? I think it can be, but we shall wait and see. But at this point, I feel like this might be the year we finally make it into the group stages.
All right. Fair point. I think you're getting a little closer. Still is work to be done. Obviously, you handle it pretty well. Brozovic, man of the match again for 3 of the last 4 Champions League games. He's done really well. Vidal, who, you know, is kind of irrelevant and relevant at the same time, comes up with a big performance out of nowhere, and you get 3 points. As far as approaching Real Madrid, considering how well you played in the first leg, for the first meeting, how are you feeling going into you know, that sort of second a chance, even a point, going to the Bernabeu trying to get something? And I know they have a ferocious Karim Benzema, but you know, it's you guys did really well when you played them before, even though you lost. So going, just sort of mentally thinking about that that upcoming game, and you know, your points away from qualifying for the next round. Where are you at as far as mentally thinking about Real Madrid?
Well, first and foremost, if we are able to repeat that performance we did in our first meeting against them of like a couple weeks ago, over a month ago, I think, I think we will be in good shape. But the difference is this will be a must-win situation in order to, like, really have any hopes of moving on. And like I said, for me, they'll need to be a little bit – I mean, obviously they were aggressive with the ball in their first meetup, but, I mean, it's just they got to step it up just a little bit more and really make sure they're taking that extra time in certain scenarios, especially in the danger zone, and really, like, focus on taking those extra seconds to execute goals with flawless perfection. Because if we don't get those goals, obviously we'll end up losing at some point. And we really need that victory. So for the first thing is obviously make sure you take that extra time, even if it's just a second, to readjust yourself and either pass the ball to a player that's open and in a non-offside position and help set them up for success. Or if you're able to take that chance, make sure you find a perfect opening between you and the goalkeeper and find that net, because that is going to be crucial. Obviously, defensively, Benzema is back, because I don't think he was there during the first meeting because of injury. But one of the main things is is to make sure he stays isolated defensive-wise, because when if Benzema starts getting that momentum, it could be detrimental to Inter's success here. So making sure he's like kind of kept in the back pocket of the defense is one of the other main situations, along with keeping your eye on Luka Modric and a bunch of other key Real Madrid players who can cause problems. So, and obviously also maintaining that winning mentality, and that we say, hey guys, we're close to finally qualifying for the knockout stages. We got to keep this winning mentality going and just not let, obviously, we know what's coming up. First, we have the Milan Derby, then international break. So hopefully no injuries happen. That's also another thing. But it's just pretty much keeping that winning mentality and just focusing on certain areas in both the attack and defense.
Okay, I got one. I have a question, but with multiple parts. But and then I'll give you a break, and I'll give my thoughts on it. Obviously, first thing is, you talked about Benzema. How concerned are you with him, considering how well he's playing? And I mean, if you want the stats, I'll give them to you. 13 goals, 8 assists. He's got 22 goal contributions this season already. I think it's. Again, people who take who they want. I think he's, without question, the second best striker in the world, other than Lewandowski. How do you think Inter should approach trying to keep him quiet? Because many have tried, many have failed. And as far as the games you have left, you have Real Madrid at home, I think, no way. And then you have Shakhtar. If you lose to Real Madrid, it's not over. Which of those two games, which is more concerning to you, considering Shakhtar has given you some problems in the past, but Real Madrid is the best team?
Okay, let's see. Wow, that's a lot to as they we act right here. First, I'll start off with how terrified am I of Benzema with how he's performing right now. I am absolutely terrified. Like I said, Benzema, it will be it, unless they keep him quiet, it could be a make or break situation for Inter, because obviously, you just said the stats. Overall, 22 goals so far, with including goals of his own and assisting. So that pretty much in of itself should terrify the hell out of Inter, since he's finally able to be a part of this Champions League squad, where in the first meetup he was out with injury or whatever it was. So how to keep him quiet? I would say shoot his legs, but unfortunately that's
I
illegal.
mean, tactically,
But
how would you
tactically,
approach that?
you would just have to make sure. Obviously, I would put one of our more seasoned defenders who can have a little, who may have a little bit easier of a time handling a veteran, such as Benzema. Whereas maybe like a Bastoni would not be such a good idea because he's young and he's still learning. Even though I will give credit to Bastoni, he has come a long way since he first started, but I don't think he's quite there yet where he's able to like make a veteran such as Benzema like cower in fear. So this is where, in my opinion, you would want to like pair him up, either De Vrij or Skriniar up with him and making sure that they stay on top of him the whole entire match and let the other two defenders take care of everybody else. In regards to which match I'm more like terrified of, obviously Real Madrid are the better team,
Yeah, no doubt.
but I think in this scenario it would have to be none other than Shakhtar. Especially with how things, ever since we beat them in the semifinals of the Europa League, they've pretty much kept us at a draw every single time. So we want revenge against them, and it's going to be very difficult because it seems like Shakhtar, no matter what, has our number, and along with us having their number. So I think it'll be a more tougher match to win against Shakhtar, but obviously you can never count out Real Madrid as they are the more superior team. But in my opinion, I think for Inter, they should settle things now, and if they get a draw against Shakhtar, it's just icing on the cake.
Yeah. So a couple of things there. Shakhtar in this Champions League group so far have conceded 9 goals. They've only scored one. They're ba if anyone if Sheriff gets 1 point against them in the next match, they'll be eliminated from the competition. On the other hand, it puts sort of a lot of pressure on Inter to deliver on that. And last time they had pressure in a situation like that, it kind of collapsed at the bits, and that was, you know, in a situation. Who's having? So that's definitely something to worry about. As far as what you're going to have to do against Real Madrid, Benzema is it's hard to fucking do anything to him to make him slow down. Or to halt him in any way. So the thing is, I think from tactically, you can say try to mess with him with De Vrij or Skriniar, but those are sort of like in the box type of center backs. What you need against Benzema is someone who can follow him. So it's a difficult one because Bastoni probably doesn't have the experience to deal with Benzema. It's not so much because obviously he's a clinical finisher, but it's how he puts himself in position on a regular basis by manipulating the offside trap and keeping his team in those positions. So you're going to need someone who can prevent him from getting into those runs, which I think I don't know if he'll play, but Dumfries probably from an athletic standpoint is more athletic than Bastoni, De Vrij or Skriniar. So in those tight spaces, I think that might be the matchup because you need someone who has the pace to stand with him, and to try to keep him off balance. And that's the one. Again, there Real Madrid pose other threats like Vinicius Junior, who got 2 assists against Shakhtar in the last game, is having a really good season. Then you have the regulars with Toni Kroos and Luka Modric and Casemiro and so many others. And then on the other hand, as good as Inter are, you got Courtois there who can handle pretty much anything that Inter physically can throw in their direction. And it's going to be a really big challenge for Inter. Great win against Sheriff. This one was more controlled and more dynamic than the previous one. But they get the points. Even if they get a draw against Real Madrid, it's good enough because they're positioning themselves really well to get into the next round. As far as who wins the group, you'll have to beat Real Madrid if you want to win the group. So that the Real Madrid game is I guess you could say it's kind of a must win if you want to win the group, because the worst thing that can happen here is, and you can attest to this, how would you feel if you qualify for the round of 16? You do your thing, you get through, finish second, and then the draw comes and you land with Bayern Munich. You know what I mean? So you're going to have to try to win the group because of the threat of being drawn with Liverpool, Ajax, or Bayern Munich, who are just playing at an unbelievable level right now. So Inter did a fantastic job of getting the points, but I think the Real Madrid one is so big. It's not quite as big as the Milan Derby, but it's considering the what's at stake right now, it's important. Again, if you lose to Real Madrid or something, if you beat Shakhtar, you're fine. It just depends how everything plays out. But Benzema is certainly something. And I think Inzaghi, I know this is weeks away. When international break is going on, Inzaghi needs to be coming up with some ideas of how you're going to stop this guy. Because, like I said, 22 goals, goal contributions this season. I just read a stat the other night. Since the departure of Cristiano Ronaldo, Karim Benzema has 100 goals and 39 assists. I mean, the numbers speak for himself. His performances in this competition speak for himself. He's one of the highest scoring players in this competition. So it's going to be a tall task, but if Inter can just get a point, they more or less put themselves in the round of 16. But again, given the circumstances of what could happen, Inter have to go out and try to win the group, because with all due respect, Real Madrid getting drawn with one of these super teams, I think they're more they can manage that better than Inter Milan can because of their experience. But if Inter Milan ends up with one of these teams like Liverpool or Bayern, it's going to be really tough. And you don't want to be put yourself in that situation, which is why their aim should be winning the group. But I do think you're going to get through finally. But the Real Madrid game is important because it really dictates who's going to win the group. Again, you'll still have to beat Shakhtar if whatever, but it's going to be a complicated one to see. And there's a lot that is still in there. All right. Speaking of your opponents, this weekend, AC Milan basically don't have any chance of qualifying now. Just 1 point from four games, a draw against Porto in the group of death. I don't know if this helps them or hurts them. They want to be there. They are the European Milan team historically. So on one hand, it's bad. But on the other hand, now their focus can be primarily on the league. What were your thoughts? I mean, it's a tough group to walk into, but what have been your thoughts on AC Milan's, I guess, lack of points, getting lack of points in the group of death?
Well, obviously you're our rivals, so I don't really give a fuck, but you know. Anyway, but to answer your question, I think this is kind of like a bad look for them. Obviously, we all know what their main objective was back at the start of last season. It was to at least qualify for the Champions League. And obviously they made it. And they would obviously want it to be a little bit more competitive in the Champions League, you know, even at least make it into the round of 16 or something to just say, hey, yo, we're back. What's up? But obviously, they've just been struggling. Yes, it's the group of death. But I think some of the main concerns from AC Milan are their aging squad. Just like Inter, some of our obviously we're starting to get some younger talent into our roster, but there are a lot of teams out there, even Juventus, you have Bernardeschi. I almost said Bernardeschi because of our friend Nico, but
Yeah,
there.
by the way, Nico's wrong. He's had multiple really good performances this season. He but collectively over time, yeah, sure. But there has been two or three performances this year where he's been incredible. So anyway, continue.
Obviously, they have Cicciolini, who are like a lot, Bonucci, who are like a lot of these teams have older players, which is one of the reasons why I think some teams struggle is because of their aging squad, and there's not that like pace to keep up with a lot of the younger teams that are out there. But I mean, it's you just said it is the group of death, so. It would have been challenging regardless of who they got put in with, unless they got a lot of easy teams. But with some of these other groups, there are a couple groups of death in this Champions League. So, I mean, it's just unfortunate they've had a bad run of form in this competition. It's not the way they wanted to make the return. And I mean, I'm gonna be nice enough to say it though. Even though what I said like a few seconds ago, I just really feel bad because this was one of their main objectives is was to make a push in this competition, and to see a fall from them is just unfortunate. But the good thing is for them though, even though I'm gonna hate saying this, now they can focus specifically on the league, which is another thing that they probably were wanting to go for quite some time too. And so in general, it'd be cool. Hey, yo, we won the league this year. You won the league this year. So we all get the Milan teams get at least one each. So, but I mean, in general, this is just not how they wanted things to turn out. But I'm just gonna say it's a nice to at least see them back in the competition, especially with since they've been absent from it for so long.
Yeah, I think we all wanted them to put a little better display, and it's not all we. There were unfortunate situations coming down to some critical moments. The Atletico Madrid one, in particular, they were 2-1 up against Liverpool. Again, it is Liverpool, but still, and Porto beating them, and then getting a draw. Again, best Porto team in quite a while. Liverpool team that's probably the second best team in the world. Then you got a Atletico Madrid team that just is coming off La Liga and added Rodrigo De Paul. So this is a difficult group. If Inter go into this group, I don't know if they have, I don't think the results may be that different because this is as excruciating as one can get. With everything that's going on with them. But in a weird sense, it gives them the sort of motivation to go into the league now with more killer will, because I think, again, Napoli can count their points up and say, oh, we are contending. No, you're not. When you play badly and win consistently, you're not that super power that you think you are. Again, I hate Napoli. People know I hate Napoli. But still, if you're winning games, but you're playing poorly, and you're trying to think of when Napoli actually put together a dominating performance, you have to go back quite a bit at the very beginning of the season. AC Milan have been the best team this season in Italy. They got the same amount of points as Napoli, but they're playing better. In the Champions League, they're not doing well, and they didn't do well, and they're done. But at the same time, you have to understand that this puts a lot of pressure on them in a different way to now win the league. If you're going to choke out of the Champions League, make it count for something. Take back the city that belongs to you. Get another Scudetto. We know that Inter Milan have one fraudulent one that they got because Juventus cheated. But they're still they. If you look at the titles, they still count that one. So now Inter has one more title than AC Milan. AC Milan are gonna now, I think, use this as motivation to take back the city and stuff. But in any other circumstances, in any other group, they're probably doing better. And the experience thing, I don't think, is a fair point because young players don't typically don't young teams don't aren't a capable of going deep in the Champions League, mostly because they don't. They're just young guys. You need experience to win these competitions. If it's an old team from top to bottom, that's different. But anyway, I think AC Milan just let themselves down in a lot of these situations, and they're not going through. They'll probably still finish. I don't know. They probably finish bottom like you guys did last year, and that kind of helped you win the league. So now I think AC Milan have the potential to do the same. And again, I got some Inter friends. You're obviously an Inter fan, and the great Uncle Charmin is an Inter fan, who just hit the Inter guy from social media. He's legendary. But he followed me on Instagram last week, and I felt really good about myself because he has a YouTube channel, does a lot of reviews. He's among the friend group of the Serie A community on social media and stuff like that. And I like you and I like him as well. But I would say, objectively speaking, AC Milan will be the favorites for that game. And because they don't have to think about what, I mean, all with everything in consideration, Inter are probably already contemplating what they're gonna do with Benzema. Where AC Milan are like, okay, we screwed up the Champions League, that sucks, but now we're gonna go beat Inter this weekend. So I think it's unfortunate, and it's slightly embarrassing, but it is the group of death, and They just came up short once again. All right, this one's not going to take very long because it's self-explanatory. Bayern do it again. Lewandowski with 3 goals and an assist in a 5-2 victory against a strong Benfica side. What are your thoughts on Bayern continuing to, you know, do what they're built to do?
Before I get into this, say you couldn't support Roma. You have to pick one team to support. Are you picking to support Lazio, Napoli, or Inter?
I'm supporting Atlanta.
No, those were not the options.
I'd just rather die.
No, that's not an option either. I want a serious answer.
I can't support Inter because then Totti will be mad at me. I obviously can't support Lazio. Let's put it this way. If the fan base is not a part of the equation, it's definitely Napoli. I actually have a lot of respect for Napoli as a football club. I just cannot stand their fans. That's why I hate them so much, because their fans are, I just can't stand them. The fan base is the only thing that irritates me about Napoli. The club I have a lot of respect for. I have a lot of respect for a lot of the players. Diego Maradona, Hamsik, so many great legends over the years. With Inter, their fans are idiotic and delusional. But I don't like the club either. Growing up, I always preferred AC Milan because of seeing Maldini and Van Basten of the old days and so many players. Lazio, obviously, fuck them. So between the three, I'd probably take Napoli, even though it's like asking me which sword am I going to be executed with, the blue one, the dark blue one, or the light blue one.
Okay, I just had to ask because that was rolling around in my head. I'm like, okay, but anyway, back to the serious news. Basically, I wouldn't expect anything less from Bayern. I mean, it's Bayern. They've been dominant in Bundesliga. They've been dominant in the Champions League. They've been dominant in their domestic cup tournament.
Hold on. Did Gladbach not smash them to bits 5-0?
Yes, my boys beat them 5-0. Okay. But, you know, I'm just saying overall in general. Jeez, okay. Hold your jets, man. Jeez. But yeah, I should get riled up because it'll start one of those clapping fits. But anyway, I mean, you wouldn't expect anything less from this Bayern team. Nothing but a dominant performance again. Obviously, they're one of the favorites to win this whole competition again. So, I mean, just in general, they're just steamrolling and continuing to prove why they're the baddest motherfucking football team on the planet.
Yeah, I mean, again, the Benfica are strong side. They ripped into bits. Liverpool, Bayern, I'm going to take Bayern every time in that equation, but there are other teams that are powerful in this competition, but Bayern seem to be on a different level. You know, you look at the team that they have, you look at the depth that they have, you look at the player that they have. Lewandowski with just an amazing performance. Leroy Sané continuing to kind of take that momentum and take it to up a notch. Serge Gnabry looks great. Jamal Musiala looks great. Defensively, they wasn't the best performance, but it's their defense is way better than it was last year, which was the big criticism about them. They're the favorites, and I think they should be. And I know Liverpool are in a more difficult group, but collectively they have the best team. And again, I'm gonna say, if Lewandowski doesn't get injured, they win it last year too. Or next. So this coming year, I think it just depends on matchups, and they're gonna go through. And I don't think any team in Europe can beat them over two legs, unless PSG get their act together as far as playing as a team. Liverpool could probably beat them one on a one-off, but I just don't see this team being able to, or any team really being able to beat them two times in a row. And I think that's what it comes down to. No away goals, that rule being chucked off, helps anybody who's going to be matched up with them. But this is a nightmare with a matchup. A top five, top seven coach in the world, the best player in the world. And then you have like they're sprinkled of top five, top 10, top 15, top 20 players in the world in this team. Again, without Robert Lewandowski, they can be beaten, and it's easier to kind of mess with them. But still, remember, even without them, they almost beat PSG in that Champions League game last year. So it just proves that they are the best team in the world, and they continue to just do what they're meant to do. All right, so another team that has been dominating and making the group of death, like, you know, red carpet, has been Liverpool. Trent Alexander-Arnold with two amazing assists that beat Atletico again. Ever since the whole Andrew Robertson versus Diego Simeone situation in this group, they were excited for that prospect of going head-to-head. And Atletico Madrid, great team, but Liverpool handled them twice. What are your thoughts on Liverpool continuing to sort of, again, be what I would call the challengers to Bayern Munich?
Obviously, Liverpool, they're also one of the dominant teams out there right now. You've seen how they're performing in the Premier League on a week-to-week basis. They're continuing to perform at that top-notch level that we're used to seeing from, usually competing for a top-four spot season in, season out lately. And then you see them in European competitions where they more than likely make it into the knockout stages and make a really good push either, but usually go out sometimes in the quarterfinals or semifinals, one of the two. Obviously, I think a couple seasons ago, they did make it to the final where I think they won it.
They won. So they made it once. They lost to Real Madrid. And then the next year that they won it against Spurs and what was the worst Champions League final in football history.
I was happy I was at a wedding that day. But yeah, it was like one of those scenarios where you expect to see them at least make it a real good push in the knockout stages, if not making it to at least the semifinals. So that shows that they're a dominant team in both the Premier League and in Champions League competitions. So, I mean, just same with Bayern. They're performing at a top-notch quality level. You got great players such as Mohamed Salah. Obviously, they have a great goalkeeper. So from top to bottom, they got a great team throughout. So, I mean, just like Bayern, you shouldn't expect anything less than at least some form of perfection. Or I guess that's how I'm going to go with that one.
So Liverpool, obviously amazing, great team. This is probably the best team Jurgen Klopp has ever had. And I think deep down they're going to win the Premier League. Unless, you know, when Lukaku backs, he just starts banging in goals on a regular. But you look at all these situations, I think, would you put them in the class of the only team they could lose to is Bayern? Or do you think there are a few other teams that could beat them?
I think they're kind of in that class too, but it would depend on if like teams such as Man City and PSG really step it up a notch. But I mean, those are the only two other teams that I really could see making a push. But at this point, there's nobody who can make a real strong push than Liverpool and Bayern at the moment, because both teams are performing on a whole nother level. Whereas everybody else is kind of like on the outside looking in. But I mean, depending on if those certain teams can like switch it around, like PSG and Man City, those are like the only other teams that could get into this picture. But it's very, very like it's a stretch at this point.
Yeah. So from what I'm hearing, you're saying that Liverpool you think could be beaten by a PSG or a Man City, but that's it. But with Bayern, you don't think anyone can beat them, at least over two legs. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
So they're not – so you're saying they're not quite at the Bayern level, but they're very close, where maybe Man City could take them, maybe PSG could take them, maybe Chelsea or something could take them if they start firing. I agree. I think they can be beaten by one of these teams. Again, there's a lot of teams in this competition that are very impressive, but Liverpool are at the top of that list. Again, I think they're second favorites to Bayern. I think we deserve as human beings to have Liverpool and Bayern Munich in the final. I don't want them matched up before that. I don't want them to be on the pathway to the final with having to play one another. We deserve these two teams in the final. Jurgen Klopp, Julian Nagelsmann, Mohamed Salah, Robert Lewandowski, Sané, Gnabry, Firmino and Sané. I mean, there's so many great players in both of these teams. I hope they don't have to match up before then. Again, they're definitely not playing each other in the round of 16 because they both already won their group. But I think this is going to be a really interesting situation, and we'll see how things develop from there. And again, they look as dominant as anybody else. That was the group of death, and they're like, that didn't seem too difficult for us. And again, that's a really good Atletico Madrid team that they beat twice. So they're all through. Bayern are all through. Now the third favorites that may have caught some people off guard. Typically, when teams go to Dortmund, it's not a very nice experience for them. Taking out Bayern from that equation, it's a very tough place to play. Ajax went there, went a goal down, and beat them with a 3-1 victory. And on top of that, the reverse fixture, they beat Dortmund, I think 4-0. I mean, we're talking about Liverpool, we're talking about Bayern, and we should be. But is this cheeky little Ajax team, or do you think that they need to be part of this conversation too? Because they've sort of dominated their entire group. They're already through the knockout stage. Erik ten Hag doesn't have maybe the luxury of the superstars, but what are your thoughts on how he's, again, he's got really good players, but what are your thoughts on them being able to handle the situation and kind of becoming one of those really dark horses or potentially a favorite as well?
Obviously, just like their cleaning products, they're cleaning house. But anyway, this is just huge for, I mean, do not fall asleep on Ajax. Ajax has had an illustrious history. I mean, especially with none other than one of your favorite people, Johan Cruyff. I mean, he has success with them, and it's starting to kind of like take, it's the next generation that's kind of taking up that mantle. And this is one of those teams that you cannot, like you said, they could definitely be a dark horse within this tournament. Obviously, you pretty much hit the nail on the head with that. They may not have the superstar power, but they tactically, with what they've learned from like Johan Cruyff in the total football,
And they're
they.
not to mention their incredible academy. How many times has a kid from Ajax become a superstar and they sold them for millions? All the time. For whatever reason, there's something in the water over there or what, but it seems like they always have these guys balling, regardless of age or experience.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, even Christian Eriksen came from Ajax, and we've seen the success he's had. Obviously, with how things happened over the summer, it was just unfortunate that,
Yeah, by the way,
but.
there's actually rumors that because of this whole situation, he might be going back to Ajax. And if he can join Ajax with the team that they already have, it could take him to another level. Again, they'll have to be careful with how much Eriksen plays and all that stuff. But if he can play and there's no fitness issue, that'll only take him, that'll just take him to another place too.
Exactly. So, I mean, if they got Eriksen back, and obviously with how they would have to keep a track of how much he plays, but as long as the health is there, he could take him to the next level just because of his experience and all that he's accomplished while he was at Spurs, and then obviously, even though it was short-lived at Inter, but I mean, you just can't sleep on them because they're like I said, may not have the power, but they got the heart, determination, and they've got a great academy full of players who are now a part of the first team that you just say, wow, what are they doing that just like pretty much puts them on the map every time in and time out. And so, I mean, in general, everybody should be, even though they are dark horse, everybody should keep an eye out on Ajax because they can tear stuff up if
Yeah, you're
given
at
the certain circumstances.
yeah, you're absolutely right. Again, we're saying dark horse, the favorites per se to win going into this competition, but it almost seems like, calling them dark horse is blasphemy. Do I think they can win it, especially if they have to go against Bayern and Liverpool and others? Probably not, but there aren't that many teams that I could beat them. PSG versus Ajax. I would think about Ajax in that scenario. Again, there's a lot of other things that go into what's happening in Amsterdam, but they look at that and you look at one of the best young coaches in the world. Everybody wants to get their hands on Erik ten Hag. Again, if Man United finally grow some balls and sack their manager that deserves to be sacked, that would be great. Again, they're not going to get him this year because he's focused on Ajax and doing everything he can and with a number two goalkeeper, because the number one goalkeeper is eligible, I think, in December. But will be it seems like he's going to be making his move to Inter after that, which is exciting for Inter. But yeah, I mean, they do have Antony, they do have Van der Beek, they do have Daley Blind, they do have Sebastian Haller, who's just been balling for them lately. They have all these, again, they're not household names or world-class players, although I think Antony and Van der Beek are especially good. But you look at everything that's kind of come together, they can beat anyone when they're when playing like that. Dortmund has got Haaland. Dortmund has Marco Reus. Dortmund has Mats Hummels. Dortmund has Jude Bellingham. And they ran riot against them in Amsterdam and beat them in Dortmund. It's a very difficult one. It's a very difficult team to beat, and I think they have as good a chance as any. All right, Atlanta United, kind of the same story tale of the first game, where Atlanta did their thing, and then to save the day, Cristiano Ronaldo at the end. Obviously, Atlanta deserve a lot of credit for what they did over the two games, but even though Cristiano Ronaldo isn't the player he was. And even though in these games specifically, he didn't have a dominating performance, but he's getting in positions and he's scoring goals that matter, scoring the brace in this and winning it, not winning it, but getting a point at the end. What are your thoughts on this from both sides?
Okay, ironically enough, this was actually the first time I was able to watch the Champions League in quite some time. I work, but I got out of work early enough, thank God, and was able to watch this match from start to finish. It was a very good match. Both teams really turned it on in the attack perspective. Both they were attacking the goals like frequently and often, and obviously at times they would look like they were playing chess, like, okay, where are we going to go and when? Defensively, both teams performed fairly well, but obviously, you had Ilicic scoring for Atalanta, I believe, first.
Zapata too. How good was Zapata? He was so. I felt so bad
Zapata was
for him
amazing. I'm
because
like,
he set up
he's
the
just.
first goal too. He set up the first goal and he scores that great goal to take them back in front. I mean, it's just again Eric Bailly from Man United did a good job on preventing what could have been a third goal for them. But Zapata was so good, it was a joke.
Yeah, like I was obviously I was chatting with my friends over in England who were also watching a couple of like different football matches too in the regards to the Champions League. And we were just discussing it like Atalanta is doing really well. I'm like, I know, I mean you cannot mess with like people like Gosens, Ilicic, Zapata because even though Atalanta may never make a full-on push, but you can expect them to do great things in crucial moments. And obviously, we saw that in this matchup. Obviously, Dubon Sapata sets up Ilicic, and Ilicic finds the back of the net, giving the 1-0 lead. Then, obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo came back and said, nope.
Great goal. Great equalizer from Bruno to Ronaldo, too.
Exactly. And then you had that. Then, obviously, later on, you had Dubon Zapata getting a goal, getting on the sheet, scoring sheet himself with a flawless goal. And then, obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo secures a tie at the end. But overall, this match, despite it being a draw, was a very good match throughout. It was high octane. It's like, who's going to do what to who and when? But, I mean, it just, it has, they would, as I would like to say, it was pretty much like poetry in motion because it was just that amazing.
Yeah, it was the attacking style of Bergamo, the toughness of playing there. Zapata, Ilicic, and again, Muriel's not playing. If he is, we could be talking about a different game. But then Man United did what they did to stay alive in it. Cristiano Ronaldo, again, you can push back. Through 90 minutes, it wasn't like Ronaldo was flawless. You know, there were times in the game where you could barely find him. But then he would show up every once in a while and then have a moment. And then again, Bruno to Ronaldo, Manchester Ronaldo back in the game. And then at the end with a great goal from outside the box. And again, Juan Musso, he couldn't have done anything to get that. It was just, he came up with two huge moments. And it's not like he had a dominating performance, but he came up when he needed, and they needed him. And that's the beauty of Ronaldo. And again, he's not what he once was. You cannot honestly say that he deserves to be in the Ballon d'Or top 10. You can't honestly say he's a world-class player anymore. But he still, what he does, what he is able to do, he is a highly skilled surgeon in that area. And that's scoring goals and getting himself in those positions. Even if it's for 10, 15 minutes where he looks ridiculous, even if he's not like that for 90, he comes up and supplies it. And then I really liked his interview at the end, because a lot of criticism for Man United after the first leg. Paul Scholes, who was right, because he basically predicted the whole Liverpool annihilation, which was a few days after the first Atlanta game. And he said one thing I really disagree with, which was if Atlanta had quality players, Man United would have lost the game. And I thought that was slightly disrespectful to how good Atlanta actually is, and so on and so forth. But, you know, again, he was right about some other things, but I thought that comment was out of line. In the post game, he talked about how great Atlanta really is and how that, you know, how great coach, great attacking system, and it always have given him trouble in the past. So I think it was a very classy move by Ronaldo. And it was just a classic Champions League match at the very end, Ronaldo doing his thing and getting that goal to save them. Again, they could have literally come away from this with two losses at home and away and saving Ole's job again. He's just been what he was supposed to be. You know, it's, again, without him, they're still scoring goals. Because goal scoring isn't exactly what Man United needed, but he's come up big in the big moments, even if he hasn't been – he's been good, don't get me wrong, but he hasn't been unbelievable for 90 minutes. But the two or three moments that he had in this game made the difference, and that's what historically great players do. And even if he's not at that level anymore, he still has the – even in his old age, can still find those moments when his team needed the most. And again – it's just unbelievable what he's able to do at this age, even if he's not at that level. Moments always arrive with Ronaldo. All right, let's see real quick. This one was interesting, just because I find this the most this is the best group in terms of the most challenging between the four teams. You have Salzburg, Lille, Wolfsburg, Sevilla, 7 points, 5 points, 5 points, 3 points. Wolfsburg starts the season with four straight wins in Bundesliga and then did not win again until last weekend when they beat Leverkusen. Get a new coach in, they get that first victory. Now they're playing at the top of the group, Salzburg, and Wolfsburg managed to pull it out. And the only reason I have this game circled, other than the fact that I like Wolfsburg, is because how close this group is. How important do you think that particular performance was for their ambitions of making the Champions League? Because they have Lille and Sevilla, which could define the whole company. But how important do you think these 3 points against Salzburg was for Wolfsburg trying to go through?
I mean, based on the point differential between the teams, it's a huge one. Obviously, since it's so close, every single point at this moment counts. So obviously, Wolfsburg came out with the plan of attack. They attacked the ball frequently, making sure that Salzburg didn't get a chance to get any momentum. Obviously, they scored a goal, but other than that, they pretty much kept Salzburg quiet. So, I mean, they did what was needed to make sure that they got those crucial points in such a close group. So, I mean, if they're able to keep this momentum up with the last two matches, they should have no issues going through.
Yeah, I think they have all the momentum now. They score late in that game to push them back in front. There's been inconsistencies with Wolfsburg, but it seems like they're starting to put it together now. They score early. They hit. I mean, Salzburg hits back from a missile from a free kick, and then Lukas Nechaja or whatever scores a great goal, almost scores a third, and in a really vital time. He's been really good the last three games, especially with Weghorst not being totally healthy and having some been in and out of the side. He's come up big, and you're finally seeing the justification of him signing away from Manchester City. A return to Wolfsburg, where he spent on loan a few years ago. Now he's here permanently, obviously many years later, and he's done a really good job of sort of getting those in those positions and continue to soldier on, and Wolfsburg gets some massive points, and we'll see what happens in the next two. But this is the one group I think we really need to look at, because it's unclear. The order of the group could be in the team that's in first place right now could finish at the bottom. That's how close this group is, which is why the points that Wolfsburg got were so important. All right, before we get to the last topic, I gotta talk to you about two things. All right. I'm gonna save the fun one for last, but your boy Antonio, first off, Lautaro Martinez and Nicola Barella, both new contracts. I assume you're very happy about that. But secondly, your boy Antonio Conte back in the Premier League with Tottenham. Obviously, there's no vindictive anything about it. You're not an Arsenal fan. But what were your reactions to the news, and what do you think he will be able to do at Spurs? This season's probably a wash, but going forward, once he gets some cash.
My initial reaction was it was good that he was able to find like a new job within a couple months of leaving Inter. Obviously, I have wished him nothing but the best in his future endeavors with Tottenham. Obviously, in regards to what he can do for this team, obviously Tottenham haven't been performing really well over the past few seasons. But he obviously we've seen what Antonio Conte has done with teams that were have I guess struggled with mediocrity, and he can take a team that is just in complete shambles and turn it into like gold basically. And So, I mean, obviously, you, as you said, flat out, this season's going to be a wash. But when he's able to get some money, he knows how to build a team centered around his objectives. And obviously, that's winning trophies. So, I mean, with the cash, he'll look at, like, okay, what does this team need? And what can we do to improve those like weaknesses? And he'll go after those players who kind of fit his system and what his goals are. So, I mean, in general, this was definitely a good move for him to go back to England, and I look forward to seeing what he does.
Yeah, I saw about 20 minutes of his game of Conference League. The Antonio Conte style is already in motion. It legitimately looked like Inter from last year. Again, without some of the players that you have. Obviously, I've been somebody who is always Arsenal's been one of my favorite Premier League sides for a really long time. I fell in love with the Bergkamps, the Henrys, the Sol Campbell, and so on. So obviously I didn't like that he went to Spurs, but objectively speaking, I feel a little worried for Ryan because I know what this man can do, and he can turn things around. He can win trophies, and with some of his players that he'll try to get in, he can do something. Harry Kane's not firing. If he comes And Conte's coming in, he'll start hitting the back of the net. Does he then still leave top Spurs at the end of the season? And so on and so forth. It's a scary situation because I think he can, within the contract that he signed, I don't know the contract, but within his time there, he can win something. I don't think he's going to win the Premier League. But if he could win an FA Cup with Spurs, a team that hadn't won anything for a really long time, that's huge. And again, I would be watching. I'd be hiring extra security at the San Siro, to prevent what's been reported. So there's two things that have been reported. Antonio Conte will aggressively go after Frank Kessié. That should make you happy. But another name on his wish list is, you might know him. He's currently plays in the Inter back line, Stefan de Vrij. And if Conte comes in with a big offer, if Inter, whatever, right, it's a possibility that he could get him off Inter, because everyone has a price. We thought Lukaku was unsellable, but they met the price and they got the deal done. So it is possible that he could pull off some moves. And once he gets a really good team, and I'll feel more nervous for Ryan because I think he can win something with Spurs. Which I hope that doesn't happen because he is one of the best managers in the world. That is not a debate. And I think Man United dropped the ball. They should have fired Ole immediately and tried to sign him. And now they let Spurs take their number one target for the job. So amazing move from and Conte, and I think he can turn that place around very quickly. All right, now the fun bit. So. Mario Icardi and Wanda Nara have again. I'm only interested in the football context of this, but we talked way back then about snakes in the grass and some of the things that have transpired due to that toxic situation. They've split now. I don't think Wanda's going to continue to be his representation, so he probably will get a new agent. Obviously, Mauro is toxic a little bit himself as well. But what are your thoughts? What was your reaction to hearing the news? And do you think this could be a opportunity for Mauro to rebuild himself and go back to Inter 2016-17, where he was banging goals like crazy?
First of all, I'm just gonna phrase like the news when I hear the news and stuff. Karma's a bitch. That is all I need.
Don't you
That
think?
is.
Funny that she cheated on her husband with Mauro Icardi. And again, Icardi's no saint in this. And then he gets with him, and then according to reports, I don't know how true it is. And then apparently Mauro cheated on her. I just think it's like the biggest karma bug on the planet. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I've been hearing.
Yeah, that's why I said karma's a bitch. Because that's all I gotta phrase it. But in regards to the more serious part of the question, obviously, if Wanda no longer is his representation and she is completely 100% out of the picture, I think he can use this time to focus and rebrand himself. And could there be a possibility of him coming back to enter without the witch from the West?
Probably not, right?
Probably not,
But
but
I'm just saying if Kent, sorry. So what I'm saying is, can he go back to that level somewhere else or PSU, wherever? Probably somewhere else.
I was getting to that before I get so interrupted.
Sorry.
But yeah, I think there is a possibility of him, like, after the, I guess, the dust has settled, and he really like focuses and really gets his mind and mentality back into that mindset of like, okay, I don't have to deal with this drama anymore. I'm gonna just focus solely on my playing career. And I think you could, whether it's PSG or elsewhere, I don't see why he cannot go back to being the scoring machine he once was. I think it just a lot of things. Obviously, he had the Rona, which basically deteriorates your health for a good couple months afterwards. But I mean, as long as he focuses and just really get works hard in training and stuff, I think he could get back on track as one of the best goal scorers in the world.
Yeah, I think this is again. Morrow is a toxic character in himself, but Wanda was the creator of a lot of the toxic things that went on at Inter. The thing is, Morrow just didn't defend himself or his teammate against his wife. You would assume that she's not going to represent him anymore. I don't know why you'd let your ex-wife into your personal affairs. I would again, it's a long shot. I would try to get Jorge Mendes, Ronaldo's agent. He seems to run his business with his clients extremely efficiently, extremely well. He's not a rat like the Raiola, who's just a fucking rat. I'm mooching off the table. Sorry, he's a rat. But if he could get Mendes to be his agent, I think that could help him dramatically. If it's not his, if he can't do that, get someone that is going to basically, I guess, Heisman Wanda and any toxic thing from that. What he wants to do is, from a PR standpoint, Mauro wants to reshape his personality. He wants to show that this was all Wanda did all this. I'm not a toxic person. I'm a good guy. You know, trying to kind of put everything together and make it so that Wanda, that it appears that Wanda was a bully and that he didn't have a say in things. So get an agent and start making better decisions. You know, don't talk about her on social media. Just leave it be and try to get a move to somewhere this summer and trying to get that goal scoring strut again, because he's capable of it. Again, is he going to be one of the best strikers in the world years from now? No, he probably won't. But he can be a 20 goal scorer somewhere. And I think this is the best thing for him. And if he makes the right decisions following this, he can become that player once again. All right. So the Ballon d'Or ceremony is approaching. It's on November 29th. So it's we're getting close. Just go from 5 to 1. We'll do it one at a time. Who are your 5 nominees? I know they made 30 nominees. That's ridiculous. 30 players are not really in consideration. At max 5. So we're just gonna do 5, and we'll just go in reverse order. You'll do one and I'll do one, etc. And so who do you think, again, not who do you think, who do you think should? That sort of thing. So who do you have in 5th for your Ballon d'Or?
Romelu Lukaku is one of the names that should be considered. obviously he had the Scudetto win with Inter this past season. He is a fairly consistent goal scorer. He's has that leadership and winning mentality. And obviously he may have gotten certain scenarios where it was like a rocky start, but once he got that fire lit under his butt, he was unstoppable. So yeah, I think Lukaku at least should be considered, especially due to the success he had with Inter.
Okay, just give me a minute. I have to count my thing right. So just give me 1 second. I just gotta make sure I'm counting this right. Okay. All right. So in fifth, I'm gonna go with. Shit! This is a tough one. Sorry, I'm just struggling. all right. I had just so you know, I had considered Lautaro Martinez for my fifth option. I considered it. Over Lukaku, and I can explain why privately on a different day, but I'm going to go Thomas Muller. I mean, his numbers were ridiculous. He is again Robert Lewandowski, we know, but Thomas Muller contributed so much into his play and his game, and the way he was able to orchestrate a lot of opportunities for Robert to score as many goals as he did. I think Thomas Muller is one of the most underrated players in football. He was. I know you don't know this, but Thomas Muller once was a Robert Lewandowski type. He was a goal scorer. That's what he was. But he over his career, he became a facilitator. Again, he's still scoring goals, but facilitating has been his primary thing now. So I think all things considered, over the last year, he's been phenomenal. So I have him in fifth. Who do you have in fourth?
Obviously, I'm taking Thomas Muller. Obviously, he may be a facilitator, but obviously when he gets those goal-scoring opportunities thrown his way, he takes them with poise and finesse. Obviously, he helps in also a defensive role at times throughout the match, too. So he's overall a well-rounded player and is capable of pretty much doing a little bit of everything, which it should be one of the top things that should be considered for a Ballon d'Or is being able to like kind of do a mixture of defending, attacking, facilitating, whatever the case may be. So with that, I'm putting him in fourth.
All right. In fourth, I have Mo Salah. Again, Liverpool last year didn't have a great season, but his goal scoring record is ridiculous. He just became the highest scoring African player in the Premier League history. He continues to go to another level this season. He's been just absolutely ridiculous. And next 2023, we could see a Mohamed Salah potentially get a Ballon d'Or. This year, I think there's too much separation from the other three. That really kind of goes into everything that's kind of being placed, but he's been incredible, and he was incredible last year. Without his goals, they probably don't get back into the Champions League after that horrible start. So I'm going to go Mohamed Salah in fourth.
In third, I am putting Karim Benzema.
I was gonna go off of you if you didn't have him. Go ahead.
I was obviously with the statistics he's put up so far this season, along with how he's been a huge contributor to Real Madrid's success in the past. It would be as Ryan would say, it would be egregious to not consider him to be a part of this. Like top list of five, just because of everything that he's done for Real Madrid and what he continues to do for them. So with that, I'm putting Karim Benzema in number three.
All right, this is going to be controversial. You're going to need some heat and mitts for this one. Again, it's a hot take, but only because of where I have him. In third, I have Lionel Messi. And I know he had an amazing season last season and been fantastic. This season, he's been good when he has played. He's not putting up the numbers, but as you know, numbers are not something I take into account all that much. But I think he's been phenomenal. I think he's been incredible. But the other two guys on this list, I think it's have had a little bit better 2021 than Messi. And Messi's been great. He's the greatest player ever. And I think he will start hitting the ground running at PSG. But the fact that he has not done that will go into it because it's the whole year. It's not just last season. So what he's doing this season, what all these players doing this season, go into account to a big degree. So because of this overall, I think this is a tough one because I had to flip and flop between my second and third, but I think Leo Messi in third is maybe controversial. He was amazing, but I think he's third is where I have him right now.
For my second, obviously, I was going to put Lionel Messi. Obviously, he contributed to the main reason why Barcelona did well for so long, especially after they sold Neymar and Luis Suarez. He basically became the only player to really do anything for the team. And obviously, with him out of the equation at Barcelona, you've seen the results that have happened. They just are not on the map anymore. But obviously, then he transfers to PSG. Obviously, he hasn't been able to replicate that success yet. But obviously, there are you have Neymar, Mbappe, who are pretty much on the what do they call it? The formations. Every single week where Lionel Messi isn't getting the playing time he was at Barcelona. So, but when he does play, he contributes like he would be at Barcelona. But obviously, once he gets the ground running, it's pretty much he'll be off to the races.
Yeah, and my number two, obviously, is Samir Handanovic. No, I'm just kidding.
Fuck
Just kidding.
our
Sorry.
set, y'all.
All right. Obviously, my number two is the Karim Benzema. I mean, he's been scoring on a regular basis. People thought when Messi left La Liga that they would have a gap. People thought when others left La Liga, other big names left the league, La Liga would become uninteresting or wouldn't have that. Karim Benzema is holding the torch of La Liga real high. He continues to score on a regular basis. He supplies on a regular basis. He goals and assists over the last year have been unbelievable. Again, 100 goals and 39 assists without Ronaldo. And this idea that there was that when Ronaldo leaves, Real Madrid can't do amazing things. Got to a semifinal, won a league title, and this last year he's been phenomenal. One of the best strikers in the world. I think the only other one who's better than him is probably number one on both our lists, but Benzema has been tremendous. And I think collectively over the year, he's been just a little better than Messi in terms of his value and everything that kind of all goes into it. But Benzema is my number two.
And obviously, in number one, Cookie Monster. No wait.
Nicole
Barella. Hey, yo, remember that one time we made fun of Inzaghi being Barella's grandfather?
Yeah, I listened back to that episode. The way I, it's not that part. It's the way I called him a little bitch. It's the way I said it that made me laugh every time.
But anyway, obviously this is a no-brainer. None other than Robert Lewandowski. Obviously, he's been the pillar of Bayern Munich for over the past few years, and he is a scoring machine. He has the it factor, if you will. He has that winning mentality that just says, "Hey, we're getting that victory, even if it kills us." And so, obviously, with all that he's contributed in regards to winning the German league season in and season out, along with winning a Champions League, it just pretty much puts the nail in the coffin. If he doesn't win it, I say we riot.
Yeah, I think it loses all credibility. Again, there are years where you can say, okay, it's between this guy and this guy. It's going to be close, but whoever wins, I think it's the right decision. With the Messi, the last one, Messi versus Van Dijk, regardless of who got it, there was going to be any big anger towards that because it was so close. Robert Lewandowski had 41 goals in the Bundesliga last season. That record was set by Gerd Müller, rest in peace, who passed away recently. That particular record held for 49 years. It was a record that in German circles in the Bundesliga, it seemed unassailable. As good as other players have been, no one's ever broken that. That's why it took so long for him to break it. He scores 41 goals. His 41st goal come in the last second of the Bundesliga season for Bayern Munich. He still missed 3 weeks and still did it in less games. You look at the Champions League, he was a monster in there. The second he got injured, Bayern Munich didn't evaporate. But if Lewandowski plays for Bayern in those 3 weeks against PSG, they win the Champions League. Sorry, Chelsea fans. If he's healthy, they win it all. So you could see the value with him in it. And he wasn't awarded the 2020 Ballon d'Or for no reason whatsoever because they canceled the award because he was about, he's about to win it. And that would have been even more lopsided than this one should be. So you take all things in consideration. Again, our friend Jack has said this phrase to me multiple times. And I think for this particular award, it's simple. With him, when he talks about the Messi-Ronaldo debate, his answer is quite actually a simple one. Why is Messi better than Ronaldo? Because he's the better footballer. That's what it comes down to. This isn't about Messi won a Copa America. It's amazing. It's great for his legacy. It has nothing to do with who's been the better player. Jorginho does not deserve to be in the top 10. I'm sorry, all of my friends from Italy. He won a whole bunch. At no point was he a top 10 player in the world. Just because he won some trophies does not mean he deserves it. This is, and I'm going to say this real slowly, this is an individual award. What he does with his teams is irrelevant to this conversation because it is an award that recognizes the best player in the world. For the last two and a half seasons, Robert Lewandowski has been far and away the best player in the world. It's not close. Early in the show, I talked to you about Karim Benzema's 22 goal contributions. Robert Lewandowski has 22 goals, not counting the assists. So, and that's a really impressive stat for Benzema. He's got the same amount of goal contributions in one area in goals, and he does it in every way. He's a complete striker. The way he sort of controls in the attack, the passing from getting the ball back when they lose possession, from scoring ridiculous goals, scoring from any angle. Robert Lewandowski right now is the best player in the world. And this would be an absolute travesty if he doesn't win it. Again, Luis Suarez, not the one but one from back in the day, who has a Ballon d'Or. He said he would give his Ballon d'Or to Robert Lewandowski if he doesn't win it. And he should win it. And not only should he win it, it shouldn't even be close. Benzema, Müller, Messi, all been great. It should not be close, not even a little close. It should be a lopside and a landslide. If you want, let's say he deserves 85% of first place votes, it shouldn't be close. And if he doesn't win it, it would be a joke. Genuinely, he is the best player in the world. They didn't give it to him when he deserved it in 2020. They better give him this fucking award in 2021. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Do not fuck this up, because this isn't a conversation to be had. We can debate about who is the best or whatever. We cannot debate who should win the Ballon d'Or, because there's only one answer to that question. Actually, there's four answers. The Robert that plays for Bayern, Robert Lewandowski, Robert Lewandowski, the Polish striker that plays for Bayern, and, the number nine on Bayern. If you want to debate between those four, who should win the Ballon d'Or, be my guest. But anyone else is not even close. I think Lewandowski should win it, and that's it. All right. Thank you for listening to the Off the Line podcast. See you next week. Ciao.